So the first thing I want to address here with these verses is that this passage can easily be read with a supersessionist lens. And if you don't know what supersessionism is, it's the idea that Christian scriptures supersede Jewish ones. Or as my friend who read this sermon said, rewriting Judaism for Gentiles. Supersessionism is a tricky and subtle theology, and it was the position of a lot of Christian churches, the majority of Christian churches, for a long time, up until after the Holocaust. And you still see it to this day. Sometimes people will refer to the God of the Old Testament as being like this, and the God of the New Testament as being like this, as if it isn't the same God. Or they will read prophecies in the Hebrew Bible as if they were all secretly wink-wink hinting at Jesus. Or they will think, I don't need to read Jewish scholars because what I've learned from my Christian background is everything I need to know. Or in the case of somebody who might read this verse, these verses, that the laws set forward in the Tanakh are outmoded at best or at worst harmful. And this can lead to and embolden anti-Semitism. It has hurt the relationship between the two faiths for centuries, and of course it would. And it would be dishonest to not talk about it when we're talking in this sermon about spiritual violence. But I don't think that that's what's happening in these verses. This isn't a rebuke of Jewish law or history. This is Paul calling out the hypocrisy of Cephas, because he lives amongst the Gentiles and he eats with them, until it is embarrassing or complicated for him to do that. And when this happened, Cephas, he had the luxury to pull back, which, if we're being honest, is something that those of us who face oppression are intimately aware is always an option for our allies. And this story of Cephas and Paul and James, it has a lot for us to draw on in what happens. And the first is that God is here with the people. If you don't know the background with the circumcision group, or the circumcision party, as some translations say, it's that James, who is the brother of Jesus, the literal brother of Jesus, believed that for Gentiles to become part of this faith, that they would have to become Jewish, which meant following all Jewish laws and customs. He wanted them to come in. Whereas Paul disagreed, and he said it would be better to go out to where the people already were. And we see this all the time in our churches today. Come into here and you will find love. Oftentimes when queer people express pain about what the church has done to us and our community, people will say, well, you need to come to my church. We are different. But that's not us being with the people. It's us expecting them to still come into a different version of us. But that kind of undercuts the whole God's love is everywhere piece. And I know that a lot of progressive churches are like, Hannah, we're great at this. We aren't proselytizing. And we've signed on the dotted line as being an open and affirming church. And that's great. But that's just the first step. It's one thing to say that everyone is welcome at our table. It's quite another to ask ourselves, are we safe people to eat with? You want your place to be a space for queer people. What does it look like to affirm all kinds of relationships? And I don't just mean this person and their monogamous romantic partner can be one of any of the two genders, as if you can't understand beyond that, but do you know how queer people build relationships? And what does it look like to honor those? Do you know how we build family? And the second piece in this story is one that will help us be a safer people to eat with, is that we have to know our history and be aware of how much power we hold. The same way Cephas has the power to walk away, and Paul and James are just discussing this community's fate without their input. And though we are a small church in the great scheme of things, we still hold the power in the history of the largest faith tradition ever. And that tradition has been very effective at spreading a message of queerphobia worldwide. I was in a training once where somebody said, we're good as progressive churches of finding experts to learn from. We will read books by different authors to get their perspectives. We'll read liberation theology and queer theology and feminist theology, and all of that is great. But we aren't great at asking ourselves, how did we get here? What is our tradition as oppressors in this situation? Do we know that a lot of queer phobia was spread as a part of our legacy of colonialism, and that it has the same roots as the West African slave trade or the genocide of native peoples? And if we don't know this history, we can really miss out on a lot of our duty to dismantle it. We have to accept queer people because it's the right thing to do is too easy a framework. A better and more honest framework is we need to recognize that our power and existence is tied into a historical oppression of marginalization of queer identities. And if we're not actively working to stop it, then we're supporting it. If we cannot be honest about our legacy and our part in that, or our descent of that, then we aren't safe people to eat with. The last piece we can pull from this story is the silencing of people hurts not only them, but also the people in power and the wider church. It's actually kind of the subject of this story, right? Cephas, who's changed his behavior because he was afraid to be associated with the people he was already sharing his life with. And I've said that he could have walked away, and he could, and he did. But I'm sure it still hurt him. And he lost out on friendship, on wisdom, on lessons. I'm sure he could have learned from these relationships. And I can imagine a church still coming into its identity, learning a lot from the people who had to build their identity from the ground up. I'm sure that the people he bailed on learned to question if this group was still safe for them. Maybe some of the people who were most excited to participate thought, oh, maybe this place isn't for me at all, after all. I remember one time Pastor Liz Edmonds saying something to me along the lines of, we hear all the time about churches worried about their numbers and the health of their communities. And I wonder how much of that was people we forced out of the faith, either explicitly or implicitly, because of this. I asked her about this past week, and she said, quote, in its ambivalence about who can and cannot be ordained, the church tended to weed out folks seeking ordination who were outspoken, who were fully proudly themselves. And as a result, we lost an entire generation of visionary leaders, including and perhaps especially a great many queer folk. End quote. And I know so many people who were, you know, claimed to be welcome into the church. They were lauded for their thoughts, were lifted up as people we should follow and learn from. But the church was rigid, and it showed that its table wasn't a safe place for them. And so they were sidelined and silenced or forced out. And the church, being in power, like any professed ally, could choose to walk away. And it did. And now, where are these powerful voices? Where is all their beauty and creativity and vibrancy? Where went all the lessons of love and identity that they were trying to teach us? Honestly, it's still with them. And God is still with them. But the church has decided that it doesn't want to be.